you're the person you are today because you were in that situation and whatnot. And you can't deny that. And I said, okay, I can't deny that. And then now over the years, I've agreed that yes, he actually was a good coach to me in a different type of a way. And I've accepted that.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim and Jamie back here today. I'm looking forward to today because I am having on a friend and a business confidant of mine that's taught me a couple of different things. He's an author of the book, Take That Leap, that I'm going to go into, and also the founder of AquaGuard Spill Resources, which is in 104 countries cleaning up the planet. Nigel is someone I met at MIT at an elite business group that also has a service mindset. He's taught me a lot of things about active service and contribution. I thought he was James Bond the first time I read his book. And we also share family values because we've been on his podcast. And he's always been a supporter of 18 Summers and has definitely taught me things to expand on our principles. So, Nigel, I just want to welcome you to our show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This is great. Really happy, so happy to be here. I really admire both of you.
and the fact that, again, for any of you that have read Take That Leap, you know what I'm talking about. I would consider you and I more mellow, hippie-type guys. Just the outdoors and surfing. Yeah. And I mean, in the opening scene of you escaping Egypt, working in oil spill cleanup was intense. It was incredible. And that's about around the same time you started to see oil spills as a kid.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that era?
Yeah, man, I was right out of high school, actually. I never forget, like the next day after the big party, you know, your graduation party, I had, came home kind of hungover and there was a ticket on my pillow and I didn't know where I was going. And actually it was for Venezuela. And so first off, I headed off the next day, all hungover, down to Venezuela on my own. And I was working for my dad's environmental mapping company. We were doing emergency response contingency planning for the oil industry. If there's an oil spill, what do you do? You know, what are the sensitive areas around the coast? And the first couple of days I was there, we were doing a flyover of Lake Maracaibo. So I was probably 17, 18 by then, I think. And we flew a little bit too far over the west side of Lake Maracaibo, a little bit over into Colombia. And then there's some pot shots taken at us by the FARC guerrillas who are still operating down there to this day, actually. Yeah. So then that was a really rude awakening. And then, like you said, I ended up in Egypt for pretty much 5 years on and off over the next while. And I really noticed the environmental degradation going on, you know, the oil coating the shorelines and the reefs. And I was a scuba diver. So I was doing some underwater surveying and mapping of these reefs. And I never forget, I was doing an overflight of the Sinai Peninsula, you know, the Sinai Peninsula kind of comes down to the tip of Egypt and Israel's kind of on the other side. And I was with this helicopter pilot. His name was Johnny, who was an ex-Vietnam pilot. And he kind of walked with his, you know, bit of a limp. And he was kind of this big old surly guy and kind of looked at this young, I was probably 22, 23 by this time. This is a couple of years later. And I had to go and do some aerial surveys of the Sinai. And he took me up and he goes, I know why you're here. I know what you're doing, but I really don't think it makes a damn difference. You're going to go back and I really don't think you can make a difference. And I was like, you know, pretty choked by this because I was full of vim and vigor. I was young and I thought I could change the world. Like a lot of us young, you know, when we're young, I got to go change the world. And I really thought I could. And so we flew over. And we had a couple of oil executives in the back seat and I had a camera kind of between my legs. I was in the co-pilot seat and he put the headsets on and he could talk to me through the microphone. And he said, Nigel, you know, poo, poo, you know, test, test, you can you hear me? And I'm like, yeah, I can hear you, Johnny. What's going on? He goes, you know, I'm going to take you over and whatever you do, don't let those guys see your camera. And whatever you do, don't let them see you taking any pictures. Because if you're taking pictures, take them through the glass in the floor, right by my feet. And I'm like, okay. He says, because if you do, we could be thrown in jail and arrested for spying. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is completely insane. And so then we flew over, we actually dropped these two fellows off and then we lifted off and then we headed north. And he says, okay, I'm not supposed to take you into this area here, but I want to take you as many pictures as you can of what you see and then take it back to the powers that be and show them. And I'm like, okay. So we fly, you know, we fly north and I see pipeline after pipeline had been ruptured and it's all flowing into the Red Sea, right? And it was just horrific. And so he took me for a while, dropped me back. And then I had my camera and my photographs and he's like, I really don't think you can make a difference, but go show, you know, wherever you have to see what's really going on here, because the people in Cairo and Alexandria, they are hundreds of miles away. Nobody sees the pollution here. And that really resonated me for like my whole life. You know, you can't make a difference. And I thought, well, I can make a difference. And getting back to your little bit there. So I was working for my father's company at the time. I worked for him for 10 years from about 1982 to 92. And we had finished our project in Egypt and he was flying in to have meetings with whoever he had to meet with to clean things up. And I was in Alexandria in our apartment where we'd been living. And I had a phone call and he had actually been, long story short, it's in my book. He was actually arrested and thrown in jail. And so I went to Cairo and I got dragged into a hotel room, sat down in the dark till 3 o'clock in the morning. And there was a ring phone call, 3 o'clock in the morning on the desk. And I was with another guy. And he said, it's for you. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's for me. Great. And all my dad did was speak to me in code. He said, basically, take the next bus and stay with Mike. And I'm like, what does that mean? And he hung up. And we figured out that he had been arrested. He was in jail. And it was a code for me to escape the country and go see stay with my cousin in London. And so I snuck out. I had a taxi driver that worked with us and he snuck me out the back, got me to the airport. I got out of the country. And it was really a really tough time for me. I don't know if you wanted to, sorry, did you want to?
No. I mean, I want to unpack. Yeah. This is all part of the book. And that's why this is not a normal entrepreneur, how I found my way family. It's unbelievable, the story. So this is reliving the book. So please continue. Because this is an interesting part where you're at a crossroad at this
point. I was at a real crossroad. I mean, I was a young guy. I was still in my early 20s, maybe I was 24 by this time, perhaps. And my sister worked for my father as well in our office in Vancouver. And I showed up, I got out of London, I got back. My dad's still incarcerated in an Egyptian prison. We couldn't get him out from London. My sister and I worked for a long time to try and get him out with all of the people in the government here in Canada, the external affairs people. And he was still being held. And I came back to Vancouver and I had to walk into that office and tell my sister what had happened. And we were just like, this is crazy. This is completely insane. And so he was released. Probably he was in for about 6 months. He was held in prison in a really horrible, horrible, horrible situation, crammed in, couldn't move. You basically shit and pissed where you stood. Sorry for anybody. And then you would rotate and you'd stand. And you would move your way to the back of this cell with 50 other people. And the guys at the back could lay down for 20 minutes and then they stood up and then they rotated, right? They kind of, yeah. And there were apparently some PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization guys in there and they were helping feed my dad and all that. So it's a crazy, crazy story. But my sister and I realized that this wasn't normal. This was we were living in this. This was our perceived normal, but this wasn't really normal for everybody. And my father, he was in trouble and I believe there was some funny business that was going on that he got caught for. And I just realized that I can't live my life like that. He was released. He came back. And I basically, in 1992, I took my sister and then it was another guy that I was working with and we left and we formed our own business called AquaGuard Spill Response. And we'd heard the call from all over the world. I was traveling. I was in Malaysia and Indonesia and China and Brazil and Venezuela and Egypt and all over 10 years. And I had people come to me, go, I if you do this, we will buy it. We need your help. We need somebody to do something like this to help contain oil spills and clean them up. And so I left my dad's consulting business and formed AquaGuard Spill Response. We're more of an engineering and design manufacturing company where we provide the customers that I met with equipment to help. It's almost like having a fire extinguisher in your house. You know, everybody's got a fire extinguisher just in case there's a fire. Well, we have our equipment on standby on terminals, on ships, just in case there's an oil spill.
So, and you're serving 104 countries.
Yeah, we've done business in 104, probably a little bit more now, but yeah, about 104 countries.
And I want to back up and kind of unpack something, which is really important. As you know, 18 Summers is about making the most of family life, as a lot of entrepreneurs always do. And I think you've done a great job of that with Moving Your Forward Family. But I know from our private conversations, it's a difficult move to separate from your father. And I just,
really maybe difficult. You could,
I know you've had insights on family businesses and that. And that was a very brave move, a big move for you to do what you thought. And
It was probably the most difficult thing I've ever had to do.
And what advice would you give people right now, Nigel, that are going through this, or should they pull their kids in when they're not wanting, or there's trouble in the family business? I mean, I don't know anyone that I think has better counsel for me on different things on this. Is there any wisdom you could share on that?
Well, I just share my experience was that, you know, unfortunately, my dad, he's 86 now, and, you know, he just actually got released from prison again. He was serving 5 years in the States, in Pennsylvania or somewhere, for a similar type thing. And he, you know, I don't know if it's a sociopathic narcissist, I believe it's a narcissistic type thing, which I think a lot of us out there live under and we may not realize it. And I was just really fortunate that I realized, and I had the help of my sister too. She was going through a lot, and we took that step, or took that leap, I guess. And I marched into my dad's office and I said, you know what? We're going to go start our own thing. And it was pretty ugly. He did not want us to leave because we were contributing to his business. And then it was basically, okay, well, you owe me this, which was a large number for us at the time. If you're breaking off, you owe me this. And I said, fine. Good. So I left, and we ended up paying it off over about 5 years of debt.
Good for you.
Yeah. And it was really, really, really hard. We had no business. we had nothing going on. And, but I was able to, again, leverage the people that I knew overseas. And one, we got a really nice contract out of Taiwan, and that got us going and got a shingle over our heads. And yeah, so, and I, like right now I'm 59 and I'm still in a forum group from Boston. It's a link to the Entrepreneurs Organization. And it's really funny how it's very similar with a lot of people that are entrepreneurs that have either started as a family business and are still are in it or have separated, or this really common, which I thought it was just a freak, you know, but it is quite a common thing, and it's really tough. It's really tough. Family stuff can be really, really tough. Yeah.
Family stuff can be tough. And something that you said,
yeah.
The perceived normal.
Yes.
It's so interesting because, you know, we're all doing our own thing and we're all a product of our family, and they're a product of their family, and so on. And you said we were operating in this perceived normal. And then we realized, wait, he's where he is because he was not making good decisions. And then he brought us into this. And then, like, as you said, those narcissistic tendencies and behavior to try to use things like money over you and such.
Yes.
That.
Yes.
How has the experience with your own parents? Because I think, for me and the path in which I've had with narcissistic parents, I also have a father. To constantly question and evaluate where's our parenting at, because
yes.
The last thing I would ever want to do is any of those things that impacted me in a negative way. How does that play?
That's really interesting that you say that. So on the contrary, like my dad, you know, I sometimes I give him a little bit of benefit for the doubt because they were raised, you know, we grew up, he was only 15 during the Second World War, but, you know, they didn't have anything. And he left England, or I'm from Wales, and they left on a boat. We didn't fly over. We were a people mover boat. We didn't have any money. We came to a new country, a new land. And so that was kind of their way. For me, it's just like, I don't ever want to raise my kids the way that I was raised. It was a total hands-off. The old British stiff upper lip, and you know, and so we may have kind of gone a little bit the other way, that I wanted to spend so much time with my kids. And you know, it's really interesting you said, because I've had counseling. I've had so much counseling. I've done a California counseling for intensive treatment, like counseling on this whole thing about, you know, a lot of about my parents. But I have a good shaman, a Peruvian shaman friend that comes back between Cusco and Vancouver, and his name's Jaime Alvarez, and he's become a really, really good friend of our whole family. And I sat down with him once a bunch of times, and he's actually dealing with the same type of thing, or he was, I think. And he said, Nigel, if you just think about it this way, is that if your father was not the way that he was, you would not be the way you are. Mm-hmm. He was actually a really good coach to you. And I was like, no, stop right there. And he goes, no, just sit back. Listen, you're the person you are today because you were in that situation and whatnot. And you can't deny that. And I said, okay, I can't deny that. And then now over the years, I've agreed that yes, he actually was a good coach to me in a different type of a way. And I've accepted that. So I deal with it every day, you know, mentally, you know, with anxiety and things, which I've get into this great routine in the morning now. And COVID's really helped me, you know, hour and a half of, you know, meditation. And now I'm doing cold ice baths with my son and my wife. And we do all this Wim Hof. We're into the Wim Hof every day. Yeah. Yeah. I even bought, because it's too warm now, it's summer. So I bought a tub and we fill it full of ice and we go in and we do our submerged every day. But it really helps with this, you know, it's the most. Yeah, that's a side.
I think that's an interesting concept too. And that's something that Jaime and I really started to learn about, is I think sometimes reverse role models are just as important as role models.
Yeah.
And it's when you identify what they are.
Yeah.
And when you can take that, because it can be a lead or an exact go the other way, but it is a directional. And that's something where I know only a shaman level could probably take away the emotion to say, yeah, but that's what they are. Cause it is, it's hard, but I definitely have always applauded that for you. And I think we've seen it in some of our family coaching. One of the most decimating things we're seeing, Nigel, is exactly what you said. There are entrepreneur parents that I think are insecure or having their own issues or haven't been there. And of those final years, they go for a last ditch attempt to hold on to the family by holding money over their head.
Control.
Yeah, it's a very, it's bizarre how often it happens. And and we're going to try to do everything we can to avoid that. But what you just described, gosh, we've dealt with it so many times.
And really?
I don't know what causes it, but it's
definitely So, I mean, on the flip side of things, I mean, when we started the business, we were young, my wife and I were young and we had one kid, two kids, three kids, little kids. I was away 6 weeks at a time. I'd be all over Southeast Asia and I'd be away and I'd be never around when they were really young. And big buddy of mine, this big 330 pound lineman football player, he just retired from professional football and he was getting into business and he had kids too. And he literally grabbed me. Like he lifted me up, his banana hands, right? Lifted me up. And he's like, you know, Nigel, you know, do you see what's happening to you? I'm like, no, like what's going on? He says, you're never around for your kids. You're always traveling. His name's Trevor Bowles, a really good friend. And he said, you know, you need to be there for your kids. You know, you're going to lose your family. And I'm like, what? I'm doing this for my family. I'm flying all over the world for my family. I'm building a business for my family. He was absolutely right. And from that day forward, you know, it was like, I really made that effort to turn things around. And I had to travel, you know, granted, but I go for, you know, a week or two. I wouldn't go for 6 weeks. And I would be at, you know, every football game, soccer game, rugby game, my ice skating for my daughter, like what all this stuff from then on. And I learned that it took a long time, but it learned, you know, never sacrifice your family for a business crisis, because in business and being an entrepreneur, we're in a crisis every freaking day.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day.
It's so true.
Every day. I mean, I go on, I mean, I talk about my forum group and I go on there and there's people in my forum group. I've been in this forum group for like 10 years and it's like, it's a crisis every month. It never changes. It's the same crisis. It's like, oh my, I just, wow. It's because we are, but we just can't see it. You know, it's just, again, that's our perceived normal in that space and time that now becomes our perceived normal, that this is normal, but it's not normal. It doesn't have to be normal.
How did you, and because you've done something incredible where we've gone up to about 2 months, but you did a year.
Yeah.
You took away from AquaGuard, which 104 companies operate in, saving oceans, but you stepped away with your family for a year.
Yep.
And took the ultimate Tom Sawyer adventure. I mean, I just love that. So, like, how did you do it? Because so many people, we want to do it. We haven't done it that long. Mm. Like, how did you do it? How did you prepare the business?
Well, I mean, again, with Trevor, my football player buddy, I got a coach. I've had a couple of coaches, but I've had one coach. His name's Kevin Lawrence. I had for 15 plus years. And we basically drew out an asteroid belt and a list of, you know, my goals and worked together, knocking off the little asteroids and then the bigger asteroids. And it got to a point where there's one thing that I did do that was huge is that we ended up buying out. I had a minority partner and I was the majority partner in the business. We ended up buying him out, bringing up a young guy that was organically grown in the business, is parachuted in, and he basically took over. So I'm 59. He's 40 and he runs the whole show. And that was the deal. I had a one-page plan. This is what Nigel will do moving forward. This is what he won't do moving forward. If you agree to that, we got a deal. That's great. And so that's how that kind of started. And then my coach, Kevin Lawrence, called me. He said, okay, Nigel, look, the business now, you're kind of got a bit more freedom here. Do you know what your number one goal was? And I'm like, no, I don't know what it is. And he goes, well, it's to take your family and travel for a year. And I'm like, like the excuses started coming up. And he goes, you know, that's your goal. That's what you wanted to do. Can you do that? And I'm like, well, I don't think I can. No. And he goes, well, what about Reiko, my wife? And he said, is she there? And he said, yeah, she's here. Well, could you ask her? So I yell across the room, hey, Reiko, you know, Kevin's on the phone and wants to know, you know, if we, you know, want to take off for a year. And she goes, absolutely. And I'm like, she said yes. And then we put it together in probably less than 3 months and we were gone. And I was all the excuses were in my head. And I found when we did it, in the first month or so, you got that twitch, you know, you just got to pick up, you got to Skype, or it was Skype at the time. Now you're zooming into the office. And the longer I was away, the less that I made contact And we were here and we went to 17 different countries, started off in Europe to ease our way in, but then it ended up in the Middle East and then around all of Southeast Myanmar and Bhutan and places that you would never dream. Like we didn't even think we were going to go there until we met people along the way that said, hey, you got to go here, call this guy. I'm like, what? And so we ended up in Myanmar. We ended up in Bhutan. We ended up in all these amazing, and then all through South America and Argentina, Colombia, Brazil. And it was just, it was absolutely incredible, but I didn't think I could do it. I'd reached the point where I'd set everything up to run without me, but my head wasn't allowing me to separate. And it was creating all these, what about the house and the dog? Dog's number one thing. That's the thing. If you got a dog, that's number one thing for everybody, right? Big. It's the dog. So we were fortunate. We had a friend that looked after our dog for a year. Wow. And we did it. And we did. And it was the most incredible experience. And you guys travel a lot, right? And you know what's the coolest thing is, like, when you travel like that, time slows down. Like, you go, you know, we'd be in some country, say you're in France or somewhere, and people are like, well, have you been up the Eiffel Tower yet? And I'm like, No, I haven't. But my wife and I would get up every morning, go down, find a coffee shop and sit for 3 hours and just sit and watch the people go by and watch the older gentlemen come in and then a couple of ladies. And it's all the old guys sit around and have their coffees and chat and they slowly, right? They're 2 hours. We were there three. And that was it. That's all. It was absolutely magical. And
I think, you know, hearing those stories about too, I mean, first of all, the setup, but I think something that travel did, and you were the one who came up to me, said, I love your name, but I just want to remind you, you know, the coaching that
I know,
I agree. You do it right. You're going to get more than 18 summers.
Yeah.
You're going to expand. And I've actually added that to my talk. And I say, my friend Nigel reminded me, the average person gets 15% more quality time after they turn 18. But I think people like you who did it right, you'll have 35%+ time.
You're going to keep getting more,
even on
the
older, because you drew that line, you did things different, and you dug a deeper.
Well, when you stood up in front of our class in Boston, like, you know, I'm always looking for those, like, sometimes I get a little bit bored and I'm like, oh, I've heard this before. But then when you stood up there and you said, all you had to say was, do you guys realize that we have 18 summers with our kids? Bam. That really, really resonated. And I started counting on my fingers, you know, right? Yeah. I was just like, and absolutely resonated. Just bam. I came home, I told my wife, I told everybody, and we were just really, really fortunate that, you know, Trevor, my football player, smacked me and he's just like, dude, you gotta. And so our kids were little. And then, you know, like you guys with the Homes of Hope stuff going down, again, challenged by an EO Forum group member of mine to go to Mexico and build hoses, right? If you want to pack a little bit, it's just
because that came from crazy, man. There's something. A core value Jamie and I share we don't know exactly what we're doing parenting. I don't think but things like Homes for Hope has taught us that one of the best offenses and defenses, I think, for instilling values is active service and contribution. Mm-hmm. Not only writing the check, but being in the trenches alongside that check, putting it to work. And Homes for Hope taught us that.
I mean, giving of yourself, there's nothing like, you know, like you said, it's giving of yourself.
Tell us a little bit about Homes for Hope, because I'd like to do that a little story.
I think Keena's 21 right now, and she was 3 at the time when my buddy David Ash, an EO Entrepreneurs Organization Forum Group member, he invited our family to go to Mexico with him and help build homes for the homeless. And I was just like, no. So the first year I'm like, no, it's good. I'm so busy with my business, I can't go. He comes back, he starts showing me photographs to our forum group. And I was just like, what the heck? This is, and his kids were young too. And they were hammering and they were playing soccer with the kids in the dirt. And so I said, Dave, we're coming. Next year we're coming. So we went. And it was the most profound thing. Like you said, seeing our 3-year-old daughter, like she was 3. And like the 3-year-olds don't get the hammers yet, but they were painting. So she's covered in paint, more paint on her than on the house. But you're working with the family. So she's working with other 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old kids. They're all, and then our boys were 5 and 7 probably. So they're hammering and they're building things. And it's the most incredible experience to give, you know, like you said, giving a check is fantastic because, you know, organizations need, you know, the funds to run. Giving yourself is fantastic, but giving as a family together, I don't think there's anything more powerful on the planet that we could do. If there is something, I'd love to know what it is, because I don't get any more jazzed up than being going somewhere with my family, my kids, and just helping, volunteering a little bit and giving our time. And just, it's really interesting. Actually, my daughter, So my daughter, Kina, she's 21 now. She bought one of these vans. So it's converting the van, got a bed in the back. She's going on a surf trip. She's heading off, right? And my buddy has he's a mechanic shop, Bruno, really sweet guy. And so we wanted to have the van checked out because she just got it a little while ago to check it out if it's good for a trip. So I went down to the shop yesterday, took the van down with my daughter, and my daughter and I went down to pick it up. And then Bruno goes, I walk in the door. He's just like, oh my gosh, Kina. He goes, last time I saw you was at Homes of Hope in Mexico when you're like 4 years old. And he just kind of looks and he goes, oh my gosh, like my kids, my daughter, his daughter's old. They're all, his daughter's probably 30 now. Kina's 21. Daughter was a little bit older. His daughter, he said, you know, that trip, I've still got that photograph. This was years and years ago. This was, 17 years ago, right? He says, I've still got the photograph of all of us there in front of the house, giving the keys to the family. And he said that, he says, his daughter always says to him, Dad, that was the best vacation I've ever had. She called it a vacation. And this was yesterday. I swear to you, this was yesterday. And then he's standing there and my daughter goes out the door and I'm looking at, and he's such a sweet, and he's got like the tears in his eyes. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, okay, don't lose it. Cause it was just this thing, this connection we had. And it was all about the kids and the family and all of us giving as a unit. And he was there with us and we all experienced this. And it was just the most powerful thing. So, and it's just, so it's wonderful. I mean, you guys have gone and you guys were doing work in Costa Rica there. I saw some of your Instagram, you know, help with your kids, you know, building, you know, it's just, there's nothing more powerful.
I think it brings a different intentionality, you know, as you're saying, writing a check is great and everybody needs money, but really putting your body to work and putting your values in alignment with your money and showing your children that it's very different. And it can be like a vacation. You're seeing these amazing.
I know they called it a vacation. I was like, wow, they said my kids. And it's, so we've been really fortunate. We've gone many times because people kind of said, will you take us? So we've been leading these trips for years and years and years. And now these kids are 25, 26, 27. And I meet them in the street and they're like, hey, Nige, when are we doing Homes of Hope again? When are we coming? You know, hey, can you help us? We want to put a trip together with a group of guys. And I'm like, it's just like, wow. It's amazing.
That's very interesting. And it is powerful too, you know, as we were talking earlier, the difference between you and I having that similar experience of being, having to think about, okay, how can I do this differently? Or going through counseling and making sure I'm not repeating the same patterns.
Yeah.
It's that same intentionality. And I think that that's one thing that maybe past generations of parents didn't bring to the table, that we're fortunate enough in these next few generations that we've become aware of, where things like mindfulness, intentionality, you know, being patient and graceful, all of these things. And I think, you know, and even the fact of having modalities like trauma counseling and shamans and medicinal assistance. And so I just, you know, I really appreciate that you guide and that you mentor from that space. You know, that's really powerful that you've shown that to your children, even as much so as through your travels and through your intentionality, you guys alongside your children created True Beach.
Yeah. So you went from Aqua Guard to True Beach, which was on a vacation, you said.
Well, it was on our world. It was on our 1 year off because we wanted to do a bit of an endless summer surf trip, right? So we were fortunate. We surfed in all these different, you know, I'm a terrible surfer. My kids are getting pretty good. Devin's pretty good. And it was just, I'd collected surfing magazines and windsurfing magazines and stuff for years. And, you know, Uluwatu and all these places, these iconic spots around the, and we went there. But then when you get there, it was, you know, it wasn't like Instagram where everybody tweaks everything. It was raw. It was real. And you're paddling into the surf. And it was, most of the days it was gorgeous. But then there's the days when it would rain and all the creeks that were full of garbage would flush out into the ocean. And you couldn't get on your board because you were trapped in plastic and junk, right? So we got so kind of ticked off, because we saw the same thing in Indonesia and in Malaysia and Brazil and even Portugal. We're in Portugal too. And so we formed this little thing called True Beach, and we made an app where you can report beach trash and garbage. And then we have alliances with groups like Surf Rider Foundation and Ocean Legacy, where we volunteer for beach cleanups and we just, you know, do joint things. And it's all just, it's all volunteer. And we get all my kids and my kids' friends. And that kind of spurred that off. Yeah. With True Beach.
I just want to say, for me and Jamie, you've been a huge inspiration, because I think you invest where you care, which is it doesn't always work for people, but you've made it work personally, professionally, financially, relationally. And I don't know if there's a better example. So,
I think, I don't know that, because I'm getting older now. And I just think that, you know, in the entrepreneurial world, it's a lot of, you know, head down and go, 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 go. But I really believe that it's our responsibility at some point. And the earlier you start, the better. Because I started later, is to give back in some way. And it's a mentor. It's to make a difference, to use our platform that we formed in all these years to do some kind of good in the world, whatever it is, whatever we choose, whatever we pick. But I think it's our responsibility to do that. I really honestly do. We've been graced with the ability to, you know, be entrepreneurs and to do our, hopefully, you know, our own thing. But there's a responsibility to that. I really think there's a responsibility to our family and to raising, you know, great. I mean, going way back, I know when I first joined the Entrepreneurs Organization, I was in my forum group. There was 9 of us. We were in it for 15, same forum group for 15 years. The number one concern of all of us at that time, when we all had little kids, was that we would raise good children, good giving children. Oh, yeah. That was the number one thing. Now, that wasn't making, you know, our business surviving. That was the biggest fear that we had, that we would ruin or spoil and raise little brats.
That's everybody's fear.
Right? You know? And
when we did our survey, Nigel, of when we first started the retreats 10 years ago, we interviewed scores of entrepreneurs. 99% of the time I said, what's your biggest concern about your family? People said, I want my kids to appreciate what they have. It was amazing. It came back time and time again.
Yeah.
So it's a common theme.
Yeah.
I wanted to, we have a finale question that I don't think you've probably heard it on some of the other shows, but we wanted to hit you with it because especially where you're at, we try to go to what we call the 75-year-old self. Because it's great to say, you know, what advice would you give your 21-year-old self? But I've learned that sometimes if we can look to what we think we'd be at in the future, the advice is pretty incredible. So what do you think 75-year-old Nigel would advise? What advice would he give?
Well, I really believe that we have a great responsibility. And if I'm 75, I have a great responsibility to share whatever wisdom I know, good, bad, with the younger generations. And, you know, I'm really fortunate now. And I mean, pre-COVID, I was probably having more coffees with 22, 23, 18, 25-year-olds than I've ever had in my life. And it was just really, really a cool, just really a cool thing to be able to go and just listen to what they have to say and bounce ideas off you and just kind of indirectly mentor. I just think sharing whatever wisdom I have, I think that's just,
Nigel, where can we learn more about you, your app, your book, all things?
Pretty much everything is on nigeljbennett.com.
Okay, nigeljbennett.com. I recommend everyone reads Take That Leap. Incredible story about active service and contribution, going into what you love, making a difference, and keeping family life strong. So we appreciate you. Look forward to more conversations together, and we'll have to have you back again.
We'll have to have you guys visit here in Vancouver and Whistler.
Yeah, we're ready for that. And Tofino.
Tofino,
you're the one who put Tofino on our lap. Some we have not been, but you're the one who put it.
I think I got to sneak into my daughter's van tonight and hide in the back, and she'll take me there on the ferry tomorrow. For so many reasons.
That's so funny. Nigel, awesome. Good seeing you. Thanks for being on today.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.